Zaostřeno.
Much like the Czech countries in the Habsburg Empire and the later Czechoslovakia, Hungary used to be a multicultural and multi-ethnic society. Yet after the Treaty of Trianon from 1920, owing to the country's political attitudes during the Second World War and due to non-existent immigration policy and extensive emigration during the communist regime, the notion of cultural and ethnic diversity in the society has disappeared. This can also explain current proposals of the migration and asylum policy with a strong nationalistic accent. The proposals have also become a subject of intense criticism by the members of the European Parliament and European Commission. We are going to focus on Hungary in the next 20 minutes with me, Daniela Vrbová. It's a hot day and the cafes, outdoor restaurants and even lawns in parks are packed with people. They chatter about anything and everything in many foreign languages. According to the Hungarian Statistical Office, there are slightly more than 140,000 foreigners in Hungary. Apart from Romanians, Germans, Slovaks and other EU citizens, it's mostly Serbians, Ukrainians, Chinese and Americans. Aysgül Gürökös is from Finland. She's been living in Hungary for more than 2 years.
My own experience is generally very good. I mean, for me, it's very pleasant. It's a lot warmer than my home country. Wine is better and I enjoy my life in here.
Besides working for an international company, Aysgül volunteers for MIGSOL, or the Migration Solidarity Group Hungary.
We walk in front of the camp. Usually we, for example, bring clothes to the nations because we have an endless flow of clothing coming towards us because surprisingly many people want to help people in need. And we usually have some like these, let's call them pull factors, that we think that make also people come outside. We might have some tea, we have the clothes, and while people notice that we are there, they invite their friends, and we also text to the people who we know that are living inside the camp. And what we generally do is that we go there, we talk to the people that we met before, and we try to follow up with their cases and try to answer the questions. Many of them also ask about irregular ways of moving forward and what are the odds on doing this or doing that.
Today, Aysgül is going to a small-size refugee camp in Bicske, near Budapest.
I haven't been in the camp before inside, but I've been visiting the gates of the camp many times to come to visit the people and talk about things that they encounter there, the conditions that they have, food, hygiene, legal advice, healthcare, all these things.
Midday sun shining on the reception of the camp is unbearable. There is a long line of young men of all skin colors by the canteen. Children and even more notably women are a very rare sight at the camp. Most of the inhabitants come from Afghanistan, Syria and Togo. From 2013 till January 2015, Hungary experienced a surge of migrants from Kosovo. They have pushed the number of asylum applications from 2,000 in 2012 to 42,000, which is a number from this January till the beginning of May. There have also been more Syrians and Afghans lately, so refugee camps are about to burst, including Bicske, where the official capacity has been exceeded almost 4 times. Yet only a small part of asylum seekers in Hungary will be actually recognized as refugees. Last year, out of 43,000, only 1,000 applicants received any form of asylum. 4,500 applications were rejected and 23,500 were prematurely terminated, and the applicants often disappear from the country. Later in the program, you will get to know why. These two young men from Syria recollect how they came to Hungary through Albania, Romania and Bulgaria. They walked a great deal of the journey and, as they say, they only survived thanks to biscuits and Snickers bars. One of them still has got a wife and a child back in Syria. The siblings of the other one are scattered across the whole Europe. In Germany, Sweden, France or any other place where they could make it following the refugee routes or thanks to student scholarships. Hungarians are nice, these two Syrians say, and they consider their stay in the camp as a recovery time.
I ventured off a little bit with one of my friends that lives inside the camp and saw some of the insides of the buildings, and he told me something about how overcrowding recently has influenced things, and told me, for example, that people are being housed in tents and in something that is like a warehouse, big iron construction. And he told me that because it's really hot and the smell in there, it is unbearable, that a lot of people are sleeping outside.
Amy Rogers, another Mixel member and lawyer from the Netherlands, shares her impressions from Bicske. She regularly goes to other Hungarian camps too.
A lot of them tell us that they're extremely bored. I mean, there's not much social activities going on in the camp. There's a lot of drug use. There's a lot of trade going on. There's a lot of alcohol abuse going on. So the rare occasion that it's possible for us to speak with women, we've heard a lot of women who were really scared to, because they were single women inside the camp, who were really scared at night and who blocked their doors, who literally put their beds and things in front of the doors, because when men in the evening would get drunk, they would start knocking on the door. They were assaulted a few times. The absolute worst thing is detention. And the camp that we were in today does not have a detention facility, but Debrecen, the biggest camp in the country, does. And it's smack bam in the middle of the open camp. So that provides psychological trauma for the people in the detention center and the people outside of it. And the Hungarian government, the biggest, most in-your-face violation is that they had detained families there for a while, especially when there was a lot of people from Kosovo coming. It was obvious that they were discriminating against them. In general, detention is supposed to be something that only happens in extreme cases for good reasons that are listed in the law. And we know that this is never tested when people are being sent to detentions.
It's the detention system that has been widely criticized in Hungary, even when Prime Minister Orbán, his party colleagues from the ruling Fidesz, and politicians from other parties consider them as a tool that helps to keep migration situation under control. They have even sort of legalized it, and currently there is a new asylum bill on its way. It calls for a more strict treatment of people that have crossed the border illegally. But even that won't help Hungary to be recognized as a country with a rule of law, explains Galen Englund. As an American student at the Central European University in Budapest, he joined the team producing a report on European asylum policy. The report is issued by the University and Allianz Foundation. In the case of Hungary, the authors have focused, among other things, on the divergence between the philosophy of Hungarian laws and the fundamental EU treaties, its directives, and the international law.
Specifically, the areas that we're seeing that are primarily problematic inside of Hungary are the detention policies present. There's been changes to the Hungarian legal code that make it questionably legal, but at the end of the day, this is a really pretty grave abuse, and you're seeing around 5,000 last year who were detained. Around 40% of all adult males who come across the border are being detained for periods of up to 12 months.
Adrienne Kish was working with the refugees for more than 5 years as a social worker. Based on her own experience, she confirms the critical view of the conditions in refugee camps.
I think it's insufficient. The people are saying that they are getting soup, for instance, and bread. There are no fruits, there are no vegetables. It's very simple food. And it's not adequate for example, children and or for pregnant women or for elderly people. And during 5.5 years while I was a social worker, I worked in an NGO in Budapest with those who are already left the refugee camps. Mainly I provided psychosocial services, for example, looking for a job, looking for a flat. We try to provide help or assistance. And what is really painful, I think, it's the lack of the real integration possibilities. Even the government tried to change. They introduced a new integration support system, new scheme in last January. But it's just not working because, if you provide financial support only, it's not enough. There are no employment programs, for instance, or there are no education programs. There are no free of charge Hungarian language lessons. You know, if you have some money and if you have to decide if you want to spend it on learning language or you need to have a flat, of course you will choose the second one.
Adrian thinks that generally the conditions in Bička have gotten worse. Clearly, even though individual social workers try their best, their effort is barred by several serious factors. Lack of finance, a constant influx of new asylum seekers and their disappearances, and especially political rhetoric and political decisions. Boldizsár Nagy is a university professor at the Central European University and one of the editors of the online Refugee Law Reader. In a restaurant in Budapest, he pulls out two sheets of paper out of his bag. These two sheets have caused a storm of reactions from the Hungarian experts on migrants and refugees, from organizations working with migrants, and from ordinary people too. Eventually, criticism could be heard from Brussels and Strasbourg, all that because of the so-called national consultation about migration and terrorism.
So, as a matter of fact, it is dangerous to my health to look at it, because my blood pressure jumps to 200. I mean, look at the title. It says National Consultation on Immigration and Terrorism. And the second question on the National Consultation on Immigration and Terrorism says, do you think that in the coming years Hungary may become a target of a terrorist act? And the options are, there's a serious chance it may happen, it's totally excluded. Now, how can you exclude something totally? If you are a philosopher, you cannot totally exclude. So all the answers should go into the, it may happen or there's a serious chance to it, and so on. So, I mean, really, there's nothing to comment on it because it does not qualify to be anything which makes sense. It's not a questionnaire. It's not a sociological investigation. It's not an advice to the population. It's nothing. It's just a vicious, vicious, vicious piece of document to generate xenophobia.
The questions are on the other sheet of the national consultation. The document is not registered or identifiable by any means, so there is no control of who has filled in the form, whether he or she has filled it with their own hand, or whether it has been filled in at all. On the contrary, the first sheet of the consultation bears a photograph of Viktor Orbán and the name and the address of the Hungarian citizens that the Prime Minister wants to consult with. He reminds his citizens of the terrorist attack at Charlie Hebdo magazine in Paris last January, criticizes the alleged incompetence of Brussels and the European Union when tackling the migrant issue, and he points out that a new threat to Hungarian citizens, economic migrants that pretend to be refugees. In reality, though, readers are informed that they want to abuse the social system and steal jobs from Hungarians. Viktor Orbán asks his fellow citizens politely if they could express their opinion about further dealing with this problem. At the press conference after the interpellations in the European Parliament, Viktor Orbán said migration was a European problem that cuts right across the political divide, and simultaneously he criticized the proposal of the European Commission to distribute refugees from the south of Europe among the other member states. According to him, human rights are important, but one has to take into account also the economic and cultural dimension of migration, and these are the topics for a public debate.
What we don't understand, and I myself do not really understand, why is this hysteria about this consultation?
Kinga Gál, Hungarian MP in the European Parliament, elected for Orbán's party Fidesz, explained for the Czech radio the purpose and the style of the national consultation in the following way.
I think if the people would know the actual situation in Hungary and what lead to the need of this consultation and the questions put forward, then maybe would understand what is it about. Because you have to see that Hungary is facing for the first time such an influx of immigrants, because they are illegal migrants who have to be sorted out, which are refugees and are rightfully coming for asylum because they are coming from war or politically instable situations, and others who are coming for a hope of a better economic life. And it's not in the news because there are not tragedies behind these influx, but you have to see that after Sweden, Hungary has to take up the largest number of illegal border crossers day by day. So that's clear that there is absolute interest in Hungary of what the government will do, how the government will solve this situation. And what the consultation is doing is putting those questions in the words of the everyday people, what they think, and gives the options to agree, partly agree, or disagree. And the questions which are there, these are the questions which actually appear on the streets. And I do not think that from here, from the European Parliament, from a political debate, anybody has the moral right to question why this or that question is put by a government towards its citizens.
Tibor Sany from the Socialist Party said the national consultation was a communication trick, whose goal is definitely not to find out the opinion of the population and take it into consideration when setting a new migration and asylum policy.
Well, it is a deviation attempt, namely to deviate the public attention from those really criminal actions what the government is pursuing in Hungary. And if you read the Hungarian press, every day you find something that some of the relatives and best friends of Orban are just gaining billions and billions of euros on public procedure cases. And so that to deviate the attention, they needed to say something very, very harsh. I condemn it because it's artificially designed questions, you know, so that to bring out the worst of people's instinct. But again, Mr. Orban is just saying that he just wanted to listen to his people, to the Hungarian nation. So again, this is a complete theater.
Benedek Javor, member of the European Parliament from the Greens, European Free Alliance, political fraction, deciphered the real purpose of the national consultation in a similar way. According to Javor, this invention of the Fidesz party should give an impression of participative democracy. But democracy is not in the focus here, nor is the opinion of the population.
I believe that if we talk about migration or immigration, Hungary has some specific experiences to contribute to the European debate and to find a common European solution. Instead of that, what the government is doing is to initiate a disgusting campaign against migrants who are coming from conflict zones, suffering from physical and mental damages because of all the things they survived, and the government is blaming those people and trying to introduce more restrictive regulation on them instead of helping them just because of an internal political reasoning. And I think this is really the deepest point where politics can go.
Political scientist István Hegedűs from Hungarian Europe Society says for the Czech radio that both the national consultation on migration and terrorism and the debate about the reintroduction of the capital punishment are symptoms of heated political competition and power struggle in Hungary.
Certainly it's more a game, it's not a real issue, but it's this one, the death penalty, is more about the competition between Fidesz and the far-right party, Jobbik, which was always in favor of death penalty. And Orban wants to take these issues away from Jobbik because Jobbik became stronger and now is becoming a challenger to Orban. But the interesting in the story is that Jobbik has become more moderate. Fidesz has become more radical. So they seem to meet at one point, and it's not evident where Fidesz ends and where Jobbik starts.
István Hegedűs also points out the illogical part of Orbán's anti-immigration rhetoric. If he wanted to stop illegal border crossings, then according to law, he should set up more centres for detained refugees and broaden the number of places where they could apply for asylum. That would be even more costly than to let immigrants have their try to take their chance at the Hungarian labour market.
And actually this consultation costs even more money whatever Hungary spends for the migrants in Hungary. So it's not about money, it's about political identity and creating a camp and bringing new elan to Fidesz, which has lost the momentum, losing its super majority, is two-third majority in the parliament. So I think Orban wants to frame the agenda with this xenophobic consultation, and it's not an issue how much it costs at all for him.
Zaostřeno. The time of Hungarian politicians and the time of Syrian refugees fly differently, though. Refugees have no time to lose, and employees of reception centers in Hungary get under stress as well. New groups of people are arriving, but after a couple of days, they disappear again. Hungary is just a changing station. Their destination lies somewhere else in Europe. That's why there are so many applications terminated prematurely. These migrants head somewhere else, and only if they are caught by the Hungarian police, they formally apply for asylum. However, as soon as possible, they pull their application from the process and they disappear. For at least 5 months, they live undercover in Europe without valid documents, and after that period, they apply for asylum somewhere else, without having to go back to Hungary, which thus becomes a secondary refugee-producing country.
If people stayed, the whole system would burst within a week,
says Boldizsár Nagy, and he counts the number of available places for asylum seekers in Hungarian reception centers. He arrives at the number of 2,500, which is hardly enough for 42,000 asylum applicants. Isn't Viktor Orbán right then when he refuses the quota suggested by the European Commission, just like the Czech Prime Minister? Hungary could hardly put up these people, even though the quota for Hungary is only 307 people.
You have to differentiate between resettlement and relocation. The quota number suggested by the Commission for Hungary is 307, who are recognized refugees by definition, because that's why you resettle them. So you don't have to conduct a procedure, you don't have to put them into reception centers. All what you would have to do is to develop a genuine program for helping them start a new life. That's another type of activity that could be done. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of apartments which are empty in Budapest or in all over the country. Nobody lives in them. If the state said, okay, I'm setting up a pool, I'm renting on a commercial basis apartments for, I don't know, 1,000 families, and I pay to the owner and I guarantee that the owner gets back the apartment in the condition he rented it out to the state. And then the state would subrent it to these people at a minimized, at a reduced rate. Come on, place there is.
Says Boldizsár Nagy, and he reminds, among other things, that owing to the economic crisis, some 200 or 300,000 Hungarians have left the country since 2008 for other EU states or the US. A similar argument was made by the first vice president of the European Commission, Frans Timmermans. He reminded Viktor Orbán that his native Netherlands have accepted a number of Hungarian refugees in 1956, and today people are proud of them in the Netherlands because they had integrated well and had enriched the society.
Volt olyasmi, ami meglepett, az, hogy a bizottság tagja az Afrikából érkező.
In his reaction, Viktor Orbán marveled how somebody could compare African migrants with Hungarian political refugees fighting against the Soviet ideology. Certainly, it's not possible to compare these two groups, and it's also irrelevant to juxtapose the years of 1956 and 2015. But the principle remains the same. A country has got the right to ignore what's happening in the world and close its borders in front of the problems caused by someone and somewhere else. But it's rather unfair to eventually expect solidarity from the others with one's own problems and requirements, especially if migration in this case is so closely linked only to employment. Orbán and Central and East European politicians are rightly considered as hypocritical in this respect, and they are recommended to take a lesson from the history. Gradually, it becomes clear that they may not approve of the quotas, but as long as they are not able to come up with a constructive counterproposal on how to deal with thousands of migrants coming to Europe every day, their criticism will be easily resolved by arguments on the European level. On 10th of June, European Parliament adopted a resolution which sees national consultation as a legitimate political instrument, but the Hungarian one about migration and terrorism is highly misleading, biased and unbalanced in the way it creates a direct link between migratory phenomena and security threats. It condemns the anti-immigration billboard campaign and requests the European Commission to monitor the situation of human rights in Hungary. This was Focus at the Czech Radio with me, Daniela Vrbová.